Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for the KE Report, focusing on politics in the first half of this segment. I've got one of the most knowledgeable people in the United States as to what's going on in our country politically right now, David Horowitz. David is the best-selling author of a very interesting book called The Enemy Within. David, tell us about whatever you want to talk about, either Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, or your new book.
Well, the new book, it's called The Enemy Within, How a Totalitarian Movement is Destroying America. And that totalitarian movement is centered, it's the leadership of the Democrat Party. I was raised by communists in the 1940s, and I've watched over a 50-year period the anti-American, they're the hate America left, led by Tom Hayden and others, infiltrate the Democrat Party, and with the election of Barack Obama, who was also raised by communists but never left the communist movement, at that point, the Democrat Party became an anti-American totalitarian party. They're at war with our democratic system. That's why there's this tremendous push by Democrats to open the gates to voter fraud, which they're masters at. How can you oppose ID cards for voting when you have to have an ID, a photo ID, to get food stamps or welfare? First of all, you have to have utter contempt for poor black people, that they're too stupid to get an ID. Second of all, the solution, if there were any truth in that, that they can't get them or don't get them, you would propose a special program and allocate some money from all those trillions you're printing to providing inner city blacks with, or poor blacks, poor minorities for that matter, with ID cards. But the Democrats aren't interested in IDs because that would prevent them from conducting their voter fraud operations, which are much larger than anybody realizes. This is a direct attack on the Democratic system. The mentality of the Democratic Party is fascist. They're doing the same thing with the southern border that created the greatest humanitarian crisis in my lifetime in this country, by opening our southern border to terrorists, criminals, funding. Biden is the biggest sponsor of drug cartels. But equally bad are the COVID carriers. How can you open a border in the midst of a global pandemic? The estimates are that there'll be 1 million illegals crossing and disappearing into the United States in this year.
Yep.
And that 10% of them will be COVID carriers. That's 100,000 COVID carriers that Biden has invited into the country. Just to spite Trump. This is the most reckless, irresponsible, anti-American presidency in our history. And, it's questionable whether the country can survive this. They want to print $5 trillion, print the money with nothing to back it up, which could spawn an inflation. Inflation is worse than depressions, because money is a kind of social glue. It's what motivates people. It's why they do things.
David,
money loses its value. There's just chaos. This is what happened during the Weimar Republic.
Can I ask you one very simple question?
The ascension of the Nazis. Yep. But the Democrats, look, they have a one-vote majority in the Congress. One vote. And they're imposing on America the most radical legislation and change in our way of life of any administration in our history. This mentality is, which has contempt for everybody. That's why, I mean, the Trump hood is rampant. Trump is not a racist. Only you can't be in your right mind and think that Trump is a racist with all that he's done for black people in this country and for minorities generally. And the fact that nobody, except maybe Al Sharpton, called Trump a racist until he ran against the Democrat, against Hillary in the 2016 election. And for 30 years he was in public life. Nobody said, this is Donald Trump, the host of The Apprentice and a white supremacist.
No.
Just that term, white supremacist. There's a handful of them in this country. What about the black supremacists? The biggest race supremacist organization in America is the Nation of Islam. Everybody knows that.
Sure.
Farrakhan is... The Black Caucus wraps itself around Farrakhan. The Democrat Party doesn't seem to have a problem with black racists. We are in such perilous times. In my book, The Enemy Within, documents this, refutes all these racist claims of the left. But my biggest concern is that conservatives are not using the appropriate language to fight this. You can't call these people liberals when they're vindictive bigots. But Republicans still do. They refer to them as liberals. They're fascists, for crying out tears. We call it cancel culture. When they take Dr. Seuss off the bookshelves, that's book burning. That's what the Nazis did in the 30s. That's what the Democrat Party, seems to universally support. Conservatives have to get a lot tougher in fighting these battles.
Well,
if you look at what's going on in Georgia, Democrats will just make assertions. There's no such thing as voter fraud. There was no voter fraud. No evidence. They have no evidence against, and of course people have been prosecuted across the board of Democrats for voter fraud. But why would you conduct a campaign against voter IDs if you weren't intent on committing voter fraud? Since they're accessible, a photo ID is accessible to anybody who needs a food stamp. Otherwise, they can't get them. Of course, they should be required for voting. They're required by all these companies that are boycotting Georgia, but look at what they've done. In the name of opposing Jim Crow, which is a complete bogus claim. I mean, Biden isn't in his right mind, so. But they're all saying this. Jim Crow was when they had poll tests. You couldn't vote without passing a poll test, and it was designed to exclude black voters in a segregated South. Nothing like that going on in Georgia at all.
David, I have to cut you off just for a second. We have to take a really quick commercial break. As soon as we're done with the break, I want to bring you right back. I want to talk about your book, and I also want to ask you a very, very simple question based on personal experience, sir, that I'm having here in the Pacific Northwest where I live and I work. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to be right back with David Horowitz, the author of the best-selling book, The Enemy Within. Stick around.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. Continuing to chat with David Horowitz, the author of the best-selling book, The Enemy Within. David, I want to tell you a little bit about an experience I have up here with some Border Patrol guards. Close friends of mine, probably my best friends in the world. They are in management on the border, the northern border of the United States. One of them is a retired Navy SEAL instructor. So these guys are not just little, you know, irresponsible kids. They are telling me that the situation on the southern border is so bad right now, and this is a situation they have personally witnessed because they are rotating immigration officers from the northern border to the southern border. My best friend is been a border employee now for I think probably about 30 years. His name is Jose Lopez. Jose's father-in-law is dying as we speak. He and his wife cannot go down to the Mexican border and visit him in his last moments. The corruption down there is so bad with the cartels. The lives are seriously at risk, not only of the people who the cartels are taking advantage of, but also of the border guards. I know that you're aware of this. I just noticed this morning that the Vice President Kamala Harris, who is in charge of that particular situation, has been for 2 weeks, sir, has not visited the border yet. What's going on, David?
The Democratic Party is an anti-American party.
They yes, it is.
Enemies of America. They're destroying it. They're doing what the Chinese communists would like to do, opening our borders in the midst of a pandemic, opening it to terrorists, opening it to billion-dollar drug cartels. These are mass murderers, these
yes,
cartels.
Sir.
And Joe Biden is their best friend. And my problem is that conservatives are not using appropriate language. I mean, it's beginning to change.
Yes, sir.
Like this Atlanta situation. What's the punishment for not wanting to make it easier to commit voter fraud? The punishment is to take $100 million away from an African-American city. Everybody in Atlanta, in charge in Atlanta, is black. So you're going to punish, and then, you know, it's a big city, so it has a large inner city. You're going to punish poor black and minority people, take away $100 million by shifting the All-Star game to a white city in the name of fighting Jim Crow. You can't get more Orwellian than that.
No, you can't.
And what I want to see is more conservatives calling these shots the way they need to be called. Do not call these people liberals. They're fascists. They're racists. Yeah, they protect black killers, like the guy who, like Noah Green, who was a follower of the biggest racist organization in America, which is the Nation of Islam, and an America hater. He was a jihadist as well. And that, you know, they're protected. First pretend he's white, then when you find out he's black, you take him off the front pages. You don't do an investigation. You know, whereas a white woman who was killed in the Capitol on January 6th, a 14-year Air Force veteran, unarmed, murdered by a Capitol policeman, you protect the identity of the Capitol police and don't, you know, conduct an investigation into her death. These are fascists. Joe Biden is a fascist. Well, he's out of it. You know, I don't even know who's in charge in this country. Do you?
No, sir, I really don't. I have no idea. I don't think anybody knows who's in charge right now. I will say this. I totally don't understand what's going on. The federal government is, without a shadow of a doubt, breaking the law by busing people from the southern border to the northern border. They are breaking the law by allowing illegal immigrants, 50 to 60% of whom test COVID positive into the country with really no problem. They are breaking the law by throwing children over the fence.
This goes back 40 years.
Yep.
The creation of sanctuary cities was breaking the law. The problem is that conservatives are very slow to understand the threat posed by these leftist fanatics who are running our country. They openly support breaking the law. They don't make any bones about it. They're letting criminals out of jails. And they're funding cartels. It's just terrible. The Democrat Party is a criminal party.
Yes, it is right now.
People have to start using this kind of language if we're going to win this battle.
I agree 100%, David.
Which is why I wrote my book, The Enemy Within.
Yes, sir.
They are enemies, and they have to be declared such. And it's easy to show. Their main attack is on our democratic system. They Jimmy Carter co-chaired a commission on election fraud, on the integrity of elections in 2005. And their main conclusion was that mail-in ballots have the most potential for fraud. They make fraud easy. And the Democrats, did they send out 92 million mail-in ballots in the last election? That's how it was stolen.
Yep.
Nobody can, in his right mind, can think that Joe Biden had 10 million more votes in 2020 than he got in 2016. No president running for re-election ever increased his vote before Trump. He increased it by 10 million. And you're telling me that Joe Biden got more votes than Barack Obama. Joe Biden, who couldn't attract a crowd of 100 people, whereas Trump had 50,000 people, for example, in Butler, Pennsylvania, which has a population of 1,250. All the enthusiasm was on the Trump side. Now, Trump was about love for this country. It was about American patriotism. And Biden's campaign was about hatred for Trump. You tell me that you think that this election, this last election, was fair. But you can tell it in the Democrats don't want to look at the election. There were no investigations into the fraud. The courts just, don't want to be in a position of deciding elections.
David, I got to stop you just for a second, but I want to give you more time. So, ladies and gentlemen, real quick commercial break. Going to be right back with an encore presentation from my friend David Horowitz. This is for a listener in England who specifically requested David come on the show. Be right back.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for the second half of the KER Report, heard on these 28 stations. Where we are in Alabama, where you live, by the way, Jeff. I'll send you the call letters on that. Chatting with Jeff Deist right now, one of my good friends, I think one of the real experts on what's going on in the arena of national politics right now. I have never been so sick in my life as to what's going on right now. I am very, very disappointed in America. I'm going to just give one opinion, and then I'm going to turn the microphone over to Mr. Deist. My opinion is I cannot believe that the federal government is actually going against not only the Constitution, but since it goes against the Constitution, it's also going against our law. Jeff, let's just get some comments from you, if you don't mind, as to what's going on with the executive branch right now.
Well, I think Biden's doing a lot of what he said he was going to do. He's just doing it maybe faster than people thought. This is a guy who basically, I think, quietly wants to remake America and wants to go down as the kind of president who is transformative, like Obama. Mm-hmm. And I think he's serious about making D.C. a state and Puerto Rico a state. I think he's serious about having really, I would consider, outrageous racialist standards for federal hiring. I think this guy is someone who in his heart wants to raise taxes dramatically. I think he's someone who doesn't really care too much about war because that's part of the United States identity and it makes him more powerful as a president. He's not motivated by any sort of anti-war sentiment, which at one time was, you know, at least reasonably strong on the left. And I don't think he cares about privacy or civil liberties at all. Look at what they're basically turning the Capitol into an armed camp 24/7 based on this, you know, phony narrative of an insurrection in January. So he's, I think, much worse than advertised. And he got past a lot of people as a sleeper, I think, because he'd been in the Senate so long. He'd been vice president. He'd been in D.C. for 50 years.
Yep.
And we felt like we knew the guy.
Boy, I got to tell you, I've never been so disappointed in my life, not because of the familial issue that I, domestic, I guess I should say, issue that I talked with you about a little bit off mic, and I'd like to keep that off mic, but let me say that I am very, very disappointed. I'm not qualified because of the argument, it's basically a statistical argument regarding the legality of the election. I don't feel like I'm really qualified to talk about that. You have any comment?
Well, I'm not sure. I suspect Biden did indeed win the popular vote because I think it's awfully hard to have that kind of margin, 6, 7, 8 million votes and have that be subterfuge. So, you know, the popular vote is not how we determine presidential elections in this country, but I suspect he did get more raw votes than Trump, but at the various states involved, the swing states involved with respect to the Electoral College, I have no idea. I mean, I think there were potentially real problems in places like Georgia and Ohio and Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. You know, the only way to know is to have been a polling official on the ground at the time. But, the idea that any sort of question or challenge about this, I mean, let's say Biden won, fine, willing to, you know, accept that. But the idea that any question or challenge to the Electoral College votes somehow makes someone an insurrectionist or, you know, you're trying to engineer a coup on behalf of Trump or something like this, I think is just nonsense. There is a margin of fraud probably in just about every election, every national election this country holds. And I think it's getting worse. I think people are going to start questioning it more and more. And it's not a healthy way to run a society, Al. If we don't believe that the person in office is legitimately there, then that's going to make for the kind of politics we saw over the last 4 years.
You know, Jeff, we got some interesting statistics coming out from the medical community, and this has really nothing to do with physical issues. It has everything in the world to do with medical issues. I spent a fair amount of time on the show chatting with psychiatrists, PhD psychologists, et cetera, and what they are concerned about is the level in our country right now, the increasing level of addiction, physical addiction, the increasing level of suicide, the increasing level of depression, et cetera, et cetera. I have never, I mean, you've been to our home. You know what we look like. You know what our neighborhood looks like. I have never seen so much anger in a neighborhood of a couple of thousand homes as I have seen over the past 6 months or so. Let's make that maybe a little longer than 6 months. Any comment on the level of angst in the country right now?
Well, it's directly tied to these crazy lockdowns, which I think were just not well thought out. People didn't consider the trade-offs. I mean, we always have viruses and colds, coronaviruses working their way through society. We always have a battle between our immune systems,
right,
and various viruses and bacteria. It's just part of human life. We don't shut down the country over it. We didn't shut down the country in the winter of 17 and 18 when we had, you know, maybe 30 million flu cases.
Right.
We didn't shut down the country during two world wars. We didn't shut down the country during the Spanish flu. I mean, this idea that we can simply cut off supply chains and have millions of people sit at home for months and get a check from the government and that there won't be long-lasting effects is just crazy. And of course, a part of those effects will be in the form of physical well-being, and part of those effects will be in the form of mental health.
Yep.
You know, people are eating worse, they're drinking more, they're using drugs more, they're smoking more, they're socializing less, and you put all that together, and people are just going to come out the other end of this much less healthy, and that's a form of impoverishment above and beyond the economic impoverishment which business shutdowns cause. So all this was foreseeable. It's crazy, and I think the stats show us over the last few weeks it's past time to end this. I mean, people are getting together in vast numbers, and cases and hospitalizations continue to decline. That's the strongest evidence we need.
That's really the only evidence we need, in my opinion. I'm pretty close to the medical community for domestic reasons, as you know, up here in Bellingham. And I have to tell you, there are a growing number of physicians who are really questioning this two-tier system of inoculation. I went ahead on the recommendation of the dialysis center up here in Bellingham, and I went ahead and got the two Pfizer shots, as did Kathy. It would be probably, if Kathy got COVID, it would probably be a very, very serious situation in her case. So we went ahead and got vaccinated. But from everything that I have read about this thing, it's interesting because the vaccinations really, as you say, are really, it's really up for argument how effective they are, although the real proof in the pudding, I would have to say, is the fact that COVID cases are dramatically down. And I just think the government, I agree with you wholeheartedly, the government went about it in entirely the wrong way. Pfizer made a ton of money. The others made, J&J, and the other one made a bunch of money. And you really have to wonder what's behind that. Any opinion, sir?
Well, there's a lot of vaccines that are going to be administered, and somebody's going to make money out of that. There's no question about it. That's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But there is something very wrong with limiting immunity or legislating immunity from lawsuit if these vaccines turn out to be harmful.
It seems to be very harmful. There's no question about that. And I agree with you wholeheartedly about your comment regarding your comment about the lockdowns, Jeff. Terrible thing for our country. And I really wonder why that even happens sometimes. Ladies and gentlemen, always a pleasure to have Jeff Deist, the president of the Mises Institute, on the program. Thanks, Jeff. Hey, welcome in here to wrap up the KER report. My guest to close the show is Stephen Lieb. The show is heard on about 27 radio stations, and you can also listen to it as we podcast it from our website, www.kereport.com. That is how you can get directed to the site. Dr. Lieb, let's talk a little bit first about commodities. I want to chat about gold and silver. Where did we close roughly this past week, sir?
Gold closed at around 1743, and silver closed at about 2525. Those are spot prices.
Boy, you know, it's on a personal note, I sold a bit of my silver holdings down at about $17, which was a profit to me. I wish I hadn't done that. How do you feel about those closing numbers, Doc?
Well, I think it, again, Al, it shows that gold and silver are kind of in a sideways pattern. And, you know, it's easier to understand with gold because gold is in a kind of a battle for civilization, if you will. It's really a battle between what will mark the new reserve currency. Will the dollar be able to maintain its status as a new reserve currency? Or will we need a new monetary system altogether in which gold plays a vital role? I think it's inevitable that we will have a new monetary system in which gold does play a vital role. Doesn't mean that we go back to your mother's gold standard, you know, the old-fashioned one in which you fix the price of gold, but rather we will go to a gold standard in which gold is allowed to float up in you know, different periods of time. It will, you know, escalate in value. It'll have to be reset in price, and I expect gold through it all, several years from now, to be well into five digits. I mean, I don't think there's any way around that. So that's where I think we're headed in gold. Silver, it's also a monetary metal, but it's not in a real battle with the dollar right now. And that's not really holding it back. But basically, I guess because it does track gold a little bit, it's not as high as it probably could be. But it'll get there. I mean, it basically is a critical industrial metal.
Yep.
And you're not going to be able to use solar energy unless you have a lot of silver.
What are you telling your investors, Doc? I'm curious. Are you saying gold or silver? I personally kind of like silver simply because profits in silver are substantially, they have to be substantially less to get some very, very good result. Well, how do you feel?
I think that that's true. Typically in bull markets, in commodities, silver will outperform almost every other commodity. That has not been the case this time around because the dynamics are much different and the stakes are much higher. This time around, it's really been the entire commodity complex, all commodities. I mean, I'm looking here at lumber. Lumber closed the week at $1,100. Now, that's up fourfold since last March. I mean, that's probably outperformed almost any other commodity. And, you know, you don't hear anything about lumber. You don't hear it in the press. You don't hear it, you know, anywhere. But it attracted me because, A, it's moving up, and, B, you don't have to be a whiz in economics to realize lumber is critical.
Sure.
I mean, if you want to buy a new house, you're going to have a lot of wood in that house, period, you know, no matter where you are. And when you see a critical commodity like lumber moving up fourfold in a little more than a year, it's a big deal. And then you see the U.S. government reporting that inflation is around 2%.
Well, I don't buy
give
that.
Me a
I,
break.
Yeah, I don't buy that at all.
No, it's ridiculous. How can lumber be up 300% and it be the most important, one of the most important components in a home, and U.S. inflation is up less than 3% or less than 2% actually by what the Federal Reserve uses? No, these numbers are nonsense. And it's partially because of these numbers that gold is, you know, sort of holding back a little bit here. But that will not last. That I can almost guarantee you. I mean, if I can just, two brief comments. There are two things right now that put us in the middle of probably the most critical transition in the history of humankind. One is that the developing world, that's 85% of the population, is growing, and it's growing strongly. And that means that the call on commodities, all commodities, is going to be exceptional. That was the case in the first 20 years of this century. It's going to be the case going forward. Second, we are going to have to replace renewable energies with the energies we use right now. But the catch is that the energies we use right now, the major energies, oil and gas and coal, are going to be critical to make this transition. And this is a very, very complex transition. And the more I look at it, the more complex I realize it is. And some of your listeners, et cetera, are going to hate to hear this. But believe me, I am no friend of China. But I can tell you right now that if we do not learn how to cooperate with China, and we do not stop, you know, all this yelling and cursing about how bad China is, and in many ways they are bad. I'm not saying that they're good, but I'm saying that as a world, if we're going to survive, we're going to have to learn to cooperate. This is really a test that, I mean, if you're religious, you believe it's, you know, a religious test to see if mankind can get through this next period. That those stakes are real. They are not anything that I'm making up. You can, you know, if you just think about it for a second, they make sense. They absolutely do. And people can read my book if you don't have any, if you have any doubt about it. But the next 10, 20 years, 1 year, 2 years, it's going to be tumultuous. It's going to be testing. And the one sure winner will be gold, incidentally. But all commodities should win. And that's exactly what's happened over the past year.
Steve, let's take a real quick break. Not a break, but I want you to take a deep breath, and I want you to answer a question for me. We've only got about 2 minutes, Steve, but so please, as concise as possible. This tumultuous time that you're talking about, describe it, if you can, briefly in just a couple of minutes, sir.
Okay. Well, again, let me begin where, go back to where I began. Lumber prices. How can lumber continue to go up fourfold without it causing a crisis? It can't. You're not going to be able to build homes. Or if you build them, they're going to be, you know, many times what they were. If you go back to March, it's not just lumber. It's not just gold, silver that's gone back up. It's all commodities. Last time I mentioned, I took a list of 30 stocks, which I happen to recommend. I don't think that they were exceptional. They went up 160, 150, 160% in a little over a year. Nothing special about them. 30 stocks. I mean, they were good stocks. I think I'm a pretty good stock picker. But the point is they represented a whole slew of commodities. That cannot continue. That will cause tumult. And when you've got commodities going up like this and you've got the government reporting inflation of around 2%, you've got the making of a real crisis, real crisis.
And is this going to be good for investors? Only yes or no.
It will be terrible for some investors, but it will be great. Great. It'll be the greatest time in the world for those investors that understand what's happening. And what's happening is commodities are taking center stage. Long-term, gold will be the leader, but shorter term, over the next year or two or three, it might be any commodity.
Yep.
Investors have to have a collection of commodities in their portfolio, whether it be through ETFs or individual stocks, or they could end up devastated. Devastated.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to contact Dr. Stephen Leeb, what I'd like you to do is simply go on our blog. I talk with him every day. Any contact that you want, I will take care of it for you. You can also reach Stephen Leeb with particular questions. I'm sure most of you are clients and have his phone number. Dr. Leeb, thank you so much.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.